Let's go to Ukraine. The sounds of Kyiv this morning. Joseph Lindsley joining us now from Ukraine. Hi, Joe.
Bob, good afternoon from Kyiv. These are the bells of St. Michael's Golden Dome Monastery on a hill in central Kyiv. St. Michael the Archangel is the symbol and the patron saint of the city. And 10 years ago today, if you can just imagine hearing those bells that we just heard, 10 years ago today in the shadow of that monastery of St. Michael, down the hill on the Maidan, which is a public square, the central square of Kyiv, students gathered to protest the Yanukovych regime. There were about 1,500 students. They're protesting Viktor Yanukovych, the president of Ukraine, who had jailed the opposition, Yulia Tymoshenko, who had previously been prime minister, was in jail, and Yanukovych was trying to pull Ukraine back fully into the orbit of Vladimir Putin, much like Belarus is today. And a small group of students, 10 years ago today, November 21st, gathered in the square. It was snowy and cold. The police showed up from the first moments because there was not freedom here. They brought batons and tear gas. In later days, the police would bring bullets and they would start to fire upon and even kill some of the many of the protesters. And for the subsequent months, starting today, the 21st of November, up until February 24th, 2014, incidentally, that's an interesting date. February 24th was the day of Russia's full-scale invasion in 2022, but it also was the day of the victory of the revolution in 2014. And during that winter of 2013 and 2014, these same bells would often ring, as they had through the Middle Ages, whenever there was a threat to the city, when the Ottoman Turks were threatening, or the Mongols were threatening to invade Kyiv, the bells of the churches of Kyiv would ring to alert the city, to wake people up. And in this case, during the revolution in that winter, to call people to come to the square to stand with the students. And the this all began, so it was all 10 years ago today. And the had those students not gathered had those bells not rung to wake up the city, there would definitely be no war in Ukraine today, because Ukraine would be completely controlled by Putin and Russia. And that's exactly what that small band of students was protesting 10 years ago today. And it's, you know, I think it's always hard to imagine sort of the what if, but imagine if Ukraine, still very much in the Soviet mindset, the Ukraine of 2013, was totally controlled by Russia with its vast resources, the largest country totally within Europe, a large army, a lot of know-how and expertise. There would be no war in Ukraine, but there very well could be a war raging through Europe. Were not for that protest that started small and that became hundreds of thousands of people that lived in that square, the Maidan Square. They were there every day through that winter until February 24th. And just another, as we consider the idea of those bells, another reminder of the centuries-long campaign of destruction of Moscow toward not just Ukrainians, but many other cultures and free people around this region. That church was hundreds of years old, but in the 1930s, under Stalin, the communist Soviet regime blew up St. Michael's Monastery. They completely erased it, and it was rebuilt exactly as it was only when Ukraine got its independence in the 1990s.
Such important history. We have quite a few emails and texts with this question for you, Joseph. Let me just read one of these. Bob, I watched 60 Minutes, very sad story about Russia taking Ukraine children and brainwashing them. Wonder if Joseph was able to see it. Thanks. Really enjoy your show. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Yes, I heard about this. It may have been in Sean Penn's documentary. At least 20,000 cases of Ukrainian children kidnapped, taken to Russia to be reprogrammed against Ukraine. What do you know about this, Joe?
Well, there's two ways this is happening. It's the children that have been kidnapped and taken into Russia, and also those who live in occupied cities like Mariupol or villages in the regions of Zaporizhia and Kherson and Donetsk. And I saw today a report of there were photographs of Russian tractor trailers bringing Russian literature to libraries in occupied places so they could replace, get rid of the Ukrainian literature and put, fill it with Russian literature. I'm glad I did not see this report, but I'm glad 60 Minutes is covering this, because it's a big part of the story that's not told, especially from those early months when Russia swiftly came into the regions in southern Ukraine and eastern Ukraine. There are many people who are struggling to reunite their families. It is possible, and it does happen now and then, that parents or relatives are able to find to find their children or their relatives in Russia. But so many of them were just taken and put into Russian orphanages in the far east of Russia. And this is not something new. I mean, it's exactly what it's the same playbook that Moscow has done for at least since the revolution of 1917, the communist revolution. But, very often there was the deportation, for example, of the Crimean Tartar people. Where they ripped, they basically just put them on trains and sent them to eastern Russia. And nothing has changed really in Moscow's playbook, whether it's the time of the Tsars, the time of the Soviets, or the time of Putin.
Isn't this what happens, or what has happened still, I guess, in Gaza, starting at a very young age? Children are, I don't know what you want to call it, programmed, brainwashed against Israelis and against the Jews.
Exactly. Well, we've seen plenty of examples of textbooks in not just Gaza, but also in the West Bank, anywhere that's under the control of the Palestinian Authority, programming the children to hate the Jews in particular. And it's the same with Moscow. And, in Ukrainian schools, so Moscow would claim, well, Ukrainians are indoctrinating Ukrainian students. And since that revolution of 2014, when Ukrainians took back control of their country, there has been a rebirth and a renovation of the Ukrainian language, which Russia had tried, many times, and made it illegal going back to the times of the Tsars. And so Ukrainian language became mandatory after that revolution in Ukrainian schools. But the idea, and I was just speaking with a journalist, she's from Zaporizhia, and that's the ancient heartland of the Cossacks. And she talked about how, from the early days of her schooling, she grew up in the early 2000s, they were schooled in the idea of freedom, not in the idea of hating some other culture entity, not even in hating Russia, despite the centuries of oppression, but more of a positive idea of our the sense that they were teaching Ukrainians that our mentality needs to be one that we must be free no matter what. And so that's a completely different starting point than an education that says, that really is grounded in victimhood. And that's what we see from Gaza, from Palestine, and from Russia.
One other question I wanted to get to this morning from the text line. Did Joseph Lindsley live in the United States before the Ukrainian war? I know the answer to that.
Yeah. I'm American, completely American. And I was traveling since about 2018. I was traveling the world. And I happened to come to Ukraine a few times, so I knew a lot about this country. And I came here March 1st, 2020, to give a lecture on a media conference at the Ukrainian Catholic University in Lviv. And I planned to be here for 2 weeks. I had a flight to Germany, to Hamburg, for a concert. And in those carefree days before the pandemic, and all that was canceled. And the borders were closed here for a few weeks. And I realized that this was probably going to be one of the freest countries of the world in the world during the pandemic, which it was. No one was locked in their houses precisely because of that revolution in 2014. The government knew they could not do what other European governments did and, restrict people's movement. This is a deeply free country. And when we knew Russia was going to invade, I said, I must stay. There must be a reason why I was here, to have the time to understand the culture and the history and a sense of freedom here.
Unfortunately for us, we get to talk to you every day. The only thing good about this war dragging on, Joe, is we get to learn more about you all the time. So we appreciate
Bob,
it.
Thanks. And speaking of dragging on, Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense of the U.S., was here yesterday, and he said, we're here with Ukraine for the long call. And we keep hearing this from Washington, the long call. And that sounds nice, but they will not say victory. And that really is bothering people here. Why? Yeah. Where is the sense of, this doesn't have to be long if you get Ukraine the weapons they need swiftly to get victory?
Good point. Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine, more tomorrow. And we'll talk to you. Thank you, Joe.